Rashford clipping it into the traffic. Header played out wide. Is there time enough to get it back? There's the final whistle. Croatia, the second smallest nation in history to make a World Cup final.
Yes! 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 No! We all picked England. Little old Croatia. They had played a ton of minutes in the World Cup. Everybody said, they ain't going to beat England. They're going to be too tired. I saw tweets yesterday when the match got going. Man, Croatia looks like they played a lot of soccer. They're really tired. Yeah. They went extra time, 109 minutes, and scored the winning goal. So what's England's excuse?
Pretty much dominated the second half in the extra time.
Yeah, they're just saving themselves. That's why they looked tired in the first half. They weren't trying. Still won. Croatia, little old Croatia against France for the World Cup Championship coming up on Sunday at 10 a.m. France and Croatia, Belgium and England, the third place match at 9 a.m. coming up on Saturday, which I will ask the question I posed on Facebook. Why do we play a third place match World Cup?
I can't answer it. I don't know if it's...
Do we really think the England and Belgium fans are going, we got to win this game and get third, because third is a much bigger deal than fourth. Because they're already deflated and depressed because they both lost one goal deficit games. 1-0, Belgium lost 1-0. And then the way England lost, do you think England wants to turn around and play a third place match?
Yeah, we're,
I'm not a huge fan of third place games typically, but definitely not at this level.
Yeah, you know, and I get where you're coming from. And I'm not going to say that those fans are saying they need to win third place. But soccer is a sense of pride for so many countries that I don't think it matters. At some, I'm saying they'd rather be in the championship. Don't get me wrong.
So
about
it doesn't
that.
Matter. You don't have to have a third place match.
Well, and I agree with that. But there's a sense of pride if we're gonna play this match. If we're gonna play,
sure.
Then we gotta win. Right. So if you're a fan of England, I mean, there's a sense of pride still there, I think, for that.
But do you think the players are going to get up for a third place match when they lost 109 minutes?
Not the same way they would for a championship.
Well, then that's the whole point. Who cares what the fans get up for it or not?
I think there's still probably a sense of pride in the game.
If there's no game or match, they ain't going to whine about, oh, we don't have a
third place. No, they're not going to whine if there's not
there. So there's going to be a match, they'll watch it, but not with the fervor that they do of trying to win the whole thing.
No, I completely agree.
And they're going to be a letdown there. Probably the watch party won't be quite as big as it would have been for the World Cup final.
No.
And then England players, for crying out loud, I don't know how you get up for that match when your goal was to win the whole thing and you can't get through the semifinals for the fourth straight time when you made the semifinals. I just don't see the big payoff here at all, other than you get people to pay money to attend another match, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, there'll be people there. There's no question about that. They'll get the ticket sales and the money that they need out of it, for sure.
That's probably the bigger reason why they have it.
It still equates to taking the two semifinal losers and having a kissing your sister contest on Saturday.
I kind of agree with that, yeah.
I mean, if I'm a player, I don't want to play in that game.
No. Especially if you lost a heartbreaker in the semifinals.
Right. It's the World Cup. It's every fourth year. You know, it's the biggest stage in the biggest sport in the world.
You think a lot of people are going to pay attention to who got third? And here's the other thing that I hear all the time. Well, the people that support third place matches or whatever, well, it gives you another chance so you don't end the season with a loss. You can end the year with a win. It also means somebody loses their last two matches of the year.
Right, which means which means that everybody that entered the tournament, except the first and third place game winners, lost their final match in the World Cup. What's one more?
Oh, my goodness. I just, you know, I understand it at smaller levels. I understand it even at I understand it at high school level, state basketball. I mean, you know it. We've all covered it.
Yeah.
Third place games at noon at 2 o'clock on Saturday after a week-long state basketball tournament don't have a lot of energy.
Yeah.
They don't. I mean, I saw Centralia after everything happened to them, Hanover in Centralia, and Hanover winning in an unbelievable semifinal game, and that was, to me, I mean, that was a championship-caliber game.
Mm-hmm.
And then Centralia turns around the next day, got to play at 2 o'clock after everything the controversy is going on. I don't know if it's the next day or it's 2 days later the way it was. But anyway, they had turnaround, and they got beat by like 30. They didn't want to be there. They were not energetic. after everything they went through. And granted, there was extenuating circumstance in that game, too. But still, when you lay it all on the line, especially against a rival in a semifinal game, and you're trying to win your championship, there are teams that go to state, they're tickled to death that they make the third-place game and go for third. Mm-hmm. And that means something to them, so maybe that's why you have third-place right. games. But there are so many of them that we see that lose in the semifinals and just really don't even want to be there for the third-place game. I mean, there's some schools that do, some schools that don't, some teams do, some teams don't. And I think it's really, you know... Like, for instance, we got district baseball tonight, and if we win, we go to state. If we lose, we play for third tomorrow, but the reason we play third place game tomorrow is that the top three out of district go to state. So that's plenty to play for. That's plenty to play for because you're trying to qualify for state, and so your top three go, the fourth place team doesn't go. Okay, there should be plenty of motivation, even if you lose tonight, to play tomorrow. And try to win to make it to state. Mm-hmm. But in this situation where you've got third-place matches in the World Cup or third-place match at state basketball, I guess I understand it more at a lower level. But at a professional level like this, I just all I see is a money grab. That's all I see.
Well, sure, yeah. And I think
because I don't think any fans are going to whine and go, you know, if they eliminate a third-place match next time they have the World Cup, I don't think you're going to see or hear many people go, oh, shucks. No third place match in the World Cup. What am I gonna do?
Yeah.
Right. Fans aren't gonna care.
No, there's not gonna be any kind of uproar.
But I agree with you. They're gonna be pride. They're gonna have pride. But that's how soccer fans are across the country. It can be an exhibition that means absolutely nothing, and these people have pride.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be a third place match. It could be a
That's what I'm saying.
Match.
Yeah. If they're on the field,
sure.
They're playing for pride, no matter what they're playing for.
Sure.
And in battle against two countries like that in the game of soccer, I mean. There's people that take it a little bit too serious, we'll say. And I'm going to say that there's still going to be some people that are going to take it too serious, even though it's a third-place match.
Yeah, it could be.
And that's just what I'm saying. I mean, that's just the way some of the fans are and how rabid things get with soccer worldwide. You know, we don't understand it here because that's not the way it is in America.
Right. Well, I can just tell you they're not going to get us up for a third-place match in a championship match, so...
There's no question about that.
I just don't quite fully get it, other than a money grab. That's all.
Well, and I mean, the thing is, it's something that they've always done, and they know they can sell it to the people that are going to go to it. So why get rid of it?
Right.
So that's why they'll probably never get rid of it.
Sure, exactly.
And I'm not saying you just keep something because that's something you've always done. I'm just saying that if people stop going to it and they don't get any ratings at all, then you got to visit. Man, maybe we probably shouldn't have this.
Right. I'm just waiting for the NCAA basketball tournament to have a third place game. You know, KU could have played La Loyola Chicago.
Yeah. When did they get? They used to have.
They'd make money on that game.
Yeah.
Don't they do it, Dusty? Why don't they do it? I mean, don't they do it? The teams are already there. And La Loyola Chicago will get more up for a third place game against Kansas than Kansas would against them. But they're already there. All the players are there. Everybody else. Why don't we have a third-place game of the Final Four? People would buy tickets. We'd get another game. I mean, and then they'd buy concessions and whatever else in San Antonio like it was this year. I mean, why not? Why don't we have a third-place game? We got the Final Four and four teams. Let's figure out who's first and third. First, second, third, fourth. We don't do it. There's a reason. And I think the reason's pretty clear in what we've talked about. Those two teams, they get to the Final Four, they're like, dude, we're all about winning it all.
Yeah.
Nobody remembers who got third. Shoot, a lot of times people don't forget who got second. They remember who won it all.
Yeah.
So I'm not a huge fan of the third place stuff. I mean, I understand the concept at a smaller level, a non-professional level, and I guess technically college basketball is a non-professional level, although some people would argue they are getting paid. We just don't know about it, which may lead us to the KU situation here in a moment. But... But it is interesting when you think about these third-place matches, you know, why do some people have them and some people don't? And people can argue, well, you know, we can play a third-place match, and that gives another chance for our seniors to win a game. It also means your seniors could lose their last two games of their career. Yeah. So which way? Half full, half empty? I don't know. Okay, the shocker in Wimbledon yesterday was Roger Federer was up 2-0. He had only lost once in 267 occasions. Going into yesterday's match with Kevin Anderson, when he'd been up 2-0 in a major. You picked Federer to win this whole thing, so bye-bye, Fed.
Yeah.
Shocking that he would lose a 2-set lead on his favorite surface, which is Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Absolutely stunning.
That's, yeah. I couldn't quite believe it. And then it kept going in the fifth, and it got up to – it was tied at 11 the last I had checked. And I'm like, you're thinking, you know, Fed's a guy that can dig deep, but he's also a guy that's aging. I mean, he's getting older. And I'm like, the longer this set goes –
he's going to have the big serve.
Kevin Anderson's going to have a better chance to win just because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know – you got to love the will of Anderson coming back and being able to
down
do that.
Two sets of nine against Federer. Most guys would have just crumbled.
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of a win he's ever going to have in his career that's going to be better than that unless he just goes out and becomes Roger Federer.
Right.
And starts winning now for forever.
Right.
Which I don't anticipate happening, but, I mean, that's going to be a memory for him that's going to stay with him forever. I mean, that was outstanding.
Well, here are the semifinals. If you don't know, Nadal won in five sets yesterday as well against Del Potro, so he was on the ropes. So Djokovic and Nadal, most people say that's the championship match. That'll be one semifinal. That's tomorrow at 9 a.m. And at 7 a.m., the first semifinal, American John Isner against Kevin Anderson. I think Isner's probably pretty happy that he's not playing Fed.
Yeah.
So that opens the door, perhaps, for American to make the Wimbledon final against either Djokovic or Nadal. We shall see. And it'll be interesting how Anderson bounces back. How many times do you see these huge upsets in tennis, and the next match they go out and they lose in straight sets? It happens quite a bit.
Yeah.
The women's semifinals at Wimbledon are underway. Serena Williams is up 3-2 on the gorgeous gal, and Kerber wins in straight sets over Ostapenko. So Kerber in the Wimbledon final coming up this weekend against either Serena Williams or the gorgeous gal, and Serena up 3-2 as we speak right now in that semifinal. Her first major after being pregnant and having a baby. And it's like riding a bike. Just jump back on, not a problem for Serena. Makes you still wonder.
I mean, it's not surprising. I mean, if she gets herself back in shape, that's all she has to do. I mean, don't lose your you don't lose that kind of talent just when you have a baby.
But you can be rusty.
Exactly.
You can be rusty, and you might not be 100 tip-top shape as you were before.
Yeah.
And I still say the quality of the field makes it a little easier for her to navigate. There's not a dominant player. There's not a big-time challenger to Serena on this tour. Hasn't been for a while.
No, not consistent.
The challenger was her sister.
Yeah.
Really. And Sharapova was the one time she beat Serena early, if I remember right, in Sharapova's career, and Serena's owned her ever since, basically.
Yeah.
So Wimbledon continuing. The Royals hit 3 home runs yesterday. Now, that's the good news. So that means we have more than one offensive highlight, although we're just going to play the one offensive highlight for you.
And he hits this one well. Away back and away gone. 3-0 Royals.
Not a big fan of Fiziok, by the way. I'm just going to say it. But anyway, the Perez hits a 3-run homer. Royals up 3-0. Good news. Yep. Moustakas hits a couple homers. All right.
And then?
5 runs on 3 homers? How can we lose? Oh, we can lose. We're the Royals. Birch Smith, his first major league start, Rule 5 pick. You know, it's a bad sign when two of your 5 starters in the middle of July are Rule 5 picks that nobody else wanted, and you grabbed off the scrap heap, and they're in your rotation right now. Safe to say, you'd imagine they're in bad shape. They are. They're in last place. 26-66, as Smith wasn't great yesterday in his first start. And the bullpen, they've got guys in the bullpen you haven't even heard of now. I mean, seriously, Sparkman? I didn't know there was a Sparkman on the team. I'm not going to lie to you. I had
first
no
heard of it.
Apparently not a Spark, except for the other team. And there was another guy that pitched for the Royals. Was it Romero? I didn't even heard of that guy either.
Yeah.
I have to say, I've kind of lost interest. I'm a Royals fan. I hope they win, but I'm not watching nearly as much Royals baseball as I did when they were winning. You can call that a bandwagon fan all you want. I still look and see if they won. I hope they win. Although, really, I should be cheering for them to lose as many games as possible because we want that number one overall draft pick, which we will probably botch. So, I sit here and I'm like, who cares about the number one overall pick, to be quite honest with you? You'll get the number two overall pick. You should have a really good player if you don't botch it.
Yeah.
You pick the right person, and then you develop them. But here's the thing. If you really do value that number one overall pick in the baseball draft next year,
what are you doing, Baltimore? Would you please just win a game?
The Royals are doing everything they can to get the number one overall pick. The Royals have lost, 10 out of 11 and 29 out of 34, something crazy like that.
Yeah.
And Baltimore, Baltimore has the audacity to lose again last night. Baltimore's 26-67. It's a two-horse race for the number one overall pick. It ain't even close. There's nobody close to Baltimore and Kansas City. Baltimore 26-67. The Royals are 26-66. Baltimore's lost 8 of their last 10. They lost to the Yankees 9-0. Royals lose to the Twins yesterday 8-5. So it's all about trying to get the worst record in baseball right now. That's what we're shooting for.
It's pretty clear that neither one of those teams are going to get any better this year either. Baltimore's trying to unload everybody.
Well, Machado, like Adam Jones.
None of these guys are going to even be there.
Royals, Moustakas, and probably others. Yeah, it's not going to get any better. Although, it can't get much worse. The younger players might actually probably they'll win more games, to be quite honest with you. Yikes. Hey, the Royals don't play today. That's the good news. They can't lose. So they got to cheer for Baltimore to win, and then they'll be tied for the worst record in baseball. So that's what we're shooting for as Royals fans this year. But one good thing is that Moustakas had a couple of home runs. That helps maybe his trade value a little bit because there's no reason to keep Moustakas on this roster. You got to get something for him. Boston, a 3.5-game lead in American League East. They have the best record in baseball. Cleveland, 8.5-game lead over Minnesota. Did you see what happened with Terry Francona, his pitching coach of the night?
I didn't, actually.
You didn't?
Uh-uh.
Okay. So he said, he told his bullpen coach, or his pitching coach, you should say, to call to the bullpen and get OP ready. OP ready. Oliver Perez. Okay. That would be a left-handed pitcher. The pitching coach thought he said OT.
Oh, man.
Which would be Otero, who's a right-handed pitcher who had pitched 3 of the last 4 games. So Francona goes out on the mound, and this is, the Indians are trying to hang on. Trevor Bauer, who's an all-star, struck out 12, 8-inning shutout ball. So they're playing the Reds, who have actually come on here recently, and the Reds were horrible to start the year. So Francona, he goes out there, and he calls to the bullpen, and all of a sudden, the guy that Francona did not anticipate coming out, and you should have seen Francona's face, like, what the? And he looks at the dugout, and the pitching coach looking at him like, so afterwards, and Otero comes in and blows it,
yeah.
Although in fairness, he had to pitch 4 out of 5 days. And Francona afterwards said, hey, that's totally my fault. I'll take full responsibility. I said OP. He thought I said OT. And the pitching coach took the responsibility. He goes, no, that's my fault. So it's like, my fault. No, it's your fault. No, it's my fault. No, it's my fault. No, it's my fault. Back and forth. And here's an idea. If you got OT and OP on your team, you probably should maybe
say
their first name or something. You know, it's once in a blue moon mistake.
Yeah.
And it cost them the game. So, you know, you get the end of the year, and Cleveland ends up not getting home field advantage because of one loss or not winning division, which I think they're safe to win the division.
Yeah.
It could end up being a costly mistake when you look back on it. So, pretty goofy thing that happened in baseball the other night. So, we thought the Royals could lose in a weird way, even the Indians in the division.
I want Perez. Not OP.
OP. Oliver Perez. Yeah, just say Perez from now on.
Otero.
I'd be like, I want Perez. Well, which one? I got 3 in the bullpen. You know, you got to specifically then say the first name, the whole name. That would be helpful. I bet from now on they're going to say last name or first name.
Yeah,
I'm guessing so.
Or I want the lefty OP. Because Otero's a right-hander and Oliver Perez is a lefty. So anyway, a big major goof up, but it was kind of funny to see, to be honest with you. Unless you're an Indian fan, I'm sure you didn't appreciate that.
Yeah, probably not. But I'm guessing they're not at this point of the season thinking about the other implications that you talked about. They're like, we're good. We're going to roll through this division no matter what
Indians
happens.
Indians are 15 games out of home field advantage with the Red Sox. Yeah. Now, remember, was it last year they won 20-some games in a row? You do that, you're right back in that situation. But I doubt that's going to happen again. Houston with a 3-game lead over Seattle, 9 games over Oakland is playing well. Atlanta, Philly tied atop the NL East. Nobody had them winning the division to start the year. The Nationals underachieving at 46-46. Cubs are 1.5 back behind Milwaukee in the Central. The Cardinals are 7 back. And the Diamondbacks back in first place. They have a 1.5-game lead over the Dodgers, 3-game lead over San Francisco. And Colorado's still in it. They're 3.5 back. But there's no question the power of Major League Baseball is completely in the American League. The 3 best records in baseball are in the American League. Boston, Houston, and the Yankees. And actually, the Seattle has the 4th best record in baseball. If Seattle was in the National League, Seattle would lead every division. But they're in the American League West. They trail the Astros by 3 games. So that's an update on the standings. If you want to look at more specifics, go to MLB.com as the Royals do lose 8-5 despite hitting 3 home runs yesterday. And it's good to see Salvi hit a home run as well. Okay, KU introducing a new athletic director day after The reports came out that KU's been subpoenaed by the federal government about the ongoing investigation involving a former Adidas executive, Jim Gatto. So where do we begin here? Well, let's start with the FBI situation, and let's go ahead and hear from Chancellor Doug Girard on the FBI situation with KU and the clause in Jeff Long, the new AD's at KU, who signed a contract. He officially starts August 1. They had a presser yesterday. Jeff Long answered a lot of questions yesterday morning at the University of Kansas. Mr. Girard did as well. And one of the things that came up was about Jeff Long's contract. And Chancellor Girard said this.
I would add that language was ours in discussion with our consultant. And knowing, of course, that story is out there, that conversation continues, we wanted to demonstrate our confidence in where we were with this and our ability to work through this and our belief that we are not at risk in this. And so that was really our doing, to put that language out there. That was not at his request. It was a way to reassure him that we are confident as well about where we are.
Do you believe that?
No.
Negative. Which said, I came over here to chat. I'm like, I'm calling, you know what, on
You're
this.
You're calling BS on that?
The Girard thing, yeah.
It was a collective negative.
I was actually surprised how quickly you guys said that, but that was good.
We've had this discussion.
You guys are ready for that one. I don't believe that at all either. I think Chancellor Girard is feeding us a hill of beans on that one. I don't know of any institution that would voluntarily put that in AD's contract.
No.
Now, they might have jumped right away and said, okay, yeah, absolutely, that makes sense. We'll put it in there. But they're acting like it was their idea. I have a hard time believing it.
Yeah.
I have an impossible time believing it.
Yeah. So we're saying that there
is... All the things that are going on around the program, and you're going to think, oh, we probably should put a provision in this contract that says if we go on probation, you get an extension of however many years that is that we're on probation.
Yeah. I don't think so. That's what KU was thinking. Because why would you volunteer that thing to any athletic director?
Well, why would you, like, sit here and, like
And he brought it up on his own. He didn't have to even say that yesterday.
Yeah. And if I'm the one that...
Well, it shows we have confidence that we're going to be okay.
If I'm the one that's taking this job...
You want assurances.
Why would a university voluntarily say, we might be on probation when you take this job?
So we'll give you two more years if it's two years probation or whatever. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I don't buy that at all. I don't buy that at all.
We're so confident that we're not, but we put that in there
in
case.
I know. It's like, well, we're really confident, but yet we got this just in case. Well, you're not that confident. If you're fully confident, you wouldn't put the clause in the contract, which means... Jeff Long's people recommended it or insisted on it, and KU says, well, we really want you. If that's the only way we're going to get you, we're going to put it in. Or they might have just said, okay, that makes sense. But if you're fully confident that there isn't anything that's going to happen, you would not agree to put that in the contract. Come on, how dumb do you think we are? anybody that totally buys that and believes that to be true, what he just said, is extremely gullible, would be my opinion. And I got some oceanfront property to sell you right here in the backyard of North Central Kansas.
Amen.
Got a full big Sandals resort right here in Glen Elder. Yeah, I keep selling you a whole bunch of other bull. Okay, so Jeff Long was asked, and I told you this question would be asked at this press conference, unlike another press conference of a different AD that was introduced a year ago at K-State, which really there wasn't a tough question asked in that one, but there were much tougher questions asked yesterday at the University of Kansas, and Jeff Long was introduced as athletic director. I don't know if that's because there's more, like, more media that's at this presser than there was in Manhattan last year. More controversial things to bring up, I guess. I don't know if they're controversial. The FBI thing is a pretty big deal, but, you know, obviously talking about the lack of success in the football program. Well, at the time when Gene Taylor came on, there was, you know, you could argue lack of success in the basketball program. Not that they weren't winning games, but that was certainly an issue. And we've talked about it before. It was pretty much all softball questions that were thrown out at that. They were all softball questions to the new athletic director, Gene Taylor, which is fine. That's what the media chose to do. I think if I'd been in that room, I would have asked a few different questions. But this conference yesterday was a little bit different, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah.
Is it because Kansas is closer to Kansas City and the Kansas City media was asking these tough questions?
And that's where I'm going to go. I mean, you can look at media that covers KU compared to media that covers K-State.
There's
I've
more.
Been around all the media that
right.
covers K-State.
Right.
I know who they are.
Right.
I mean, I'm with them during football games all the time.
Right.
And so, and you look at the media, I mean, there's such a big, there's a bigger city influence around Lawrence. There's no question
sure.
about that. The
right.
people that are covering KU.
Right.
And I think some of those bigger city media members are going to be asking different questions.
Right.
Their target audience and the target of what they want to cover
right.
is it's simply different than what Manhattan wants
right.
to cover.
Right.
There's you can't. I'm not. This isn't some revelation that I'm putting out there.
Right.
I mean, it's true, and I think that's a big part of it. Is you're going to get a lot of different questions for Bill Self in a post game press conference probably than you are for Bruce Weber.
Right. But there are, it's not just K-State people that are at this press conference last year with Gene Taylor.
Sure.
I mean, you got TV stations and people representatives from Topeka and Wichita, I'm sure, that were there.
Yeah.
And others that I'm leaving out. And the same thing with KU. But I would be willing to bet you there were more media members that were there to ask questions yesterday
at
KU's presser with Jeff Long than there was with Gene Taylor from that standpoint, and in fairness to both when we compare the two. I don't want to beat a dead horse to death. I mean, we thought last year that K-State press conference, there just wasn't any really pressing questions. It was a very, very comfortable press conference for Gene Taylor.
And honestly.
And Jeff Long, that was not a super comfortable press conference yesterday.
And honestly, I mean, you can.
And he was prepared for it.
Yeah, you can go into it and understand that there's going to be more pressing issues at the KU one.
Sure.
Right off the bat with the
right.
FBI thing,
sure.
the failures of the football program.
Right.
You know, there's really only one thing you had to ask at K-State last year, and they didn't ask
it. And they didn't even ask. That would have been easier to get to.
And a big press conference. You know, there wasn't any other real issues that were going on around the program.
Yeah.
You know, the finances were good. Football teams playing good.
Right.
That's obviously always usually the biggest, no matter what, when an AD gets hired, is football.
Sure.
What's going on with football?
Right.
And the only thing was, what's the state of the basketball program? That's really the only thing that was controversial at all at K-State last year.
Yeah, and it wasn't brought up.
Yeah.
At least not in the main presser. So anyway, Jeff Long has his presser yesterday at the University of Kansas. He was asked about the FBI investigation that KU has been subpoenaed for.
I will say that I'm very confident that Kansas, we're going to work through this process and we're going to be just fine. I think that was something I certainly considered as I decided to take the job. So, you know, I'm very confident that we're going to work through this.
So he's confident. Of course he is. I mean, he said what you're going to say. I mean, if you weren't confident, you wouldn't have taken the job.
Yeah.
And plus, you got the clause in the contract to cover you even more because you didn't create the mess that you're kind of inheriting. So after all of that, Jeff Long, of course, says the normal things that an athletic director would say. He's happy to be at Kansas.
It's a beautiful day to be in Kansas, and I couldn't be more excited about taking over the reins of the Kansas athletic program. Chancellor, thank you. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to lead Kansas athletics. I'm incredibly proud to be part of a world-class institution that's an AAU institution and really is reaching around the globe, as it says in our motto here.
Isn't that part of the problem? They're paying AAU coaches to get players? Oh, wait a minute. Okay, my bad. I misunderstood that part. Okay, when he said AAU, that's the first thing
I know. I hear AAU, all I think about is AAU basketball.
I do, too. I do, too. So the biggest thing to me, of course, some people would say the biggest thing is the football situation and Jeff Long coming on board. To me, the more interesting topic to discuss is the FBI investigation into the University of Kansas and its basketball program. That's of more interest to me personally, and the bigger pressing issue and the first thing I would have asked Mr. Long, and then I would have moved to the football side of things. Now, what's really interesting is he has two daughters, and one of them goes to the University of Missouri. And he did not mention the University of Missouri when he introduced his family. He said his daughter is going to an institution that borders this state. So that was pretty funny. So it is kind of weird. You got an athlete director that is actually paying money, unless his daughter's on full scholarship, but I don't think she's an athlete. She could still get full scholarship and not be an athlete, but I don't think she is. So
she's
paying money.
She's a journalism major. I don't know if she's doing anything else.
Right.
I'm sure it costs quite a bit of money to take journalism at Missouri.
I'm guessing that Jeff Long is now the new athlete director of Kansas is writing checks to the University of Missouri.
Yeah.
It seems a little bit weird. But anyway, it is what it is. They got the guy that they want, Jeff Long, to be their new AD. So what about football? What about football? Here is Jeff Long, the new AD at Kansas, talking about KU's football program.
I'd like to say one message to the KU family specifically about our football team. It's time to break the cycle. It's not going to be easy. We're going to need all of your help to do it. Coach Beatty is our coach, and we all need to support this program and we need to support the young men that play the game. Our student athletes are working incredibly hard to win for Kansas. They are Jayhawks, and they need your support, and this program needs your support. Do whatever you can do to help us be successful. It's time to break the cycle.
I'd say it's well past time to break the cycle. Nope. So he's kind of pointing out the obvious there. If you're a KU fan, you hear that, like, well, duh.
Yeah.
The other thing that he said in there was David Beatty's name was mentioned in support. My question will be, a year from now, will you still be supporting David Beatty as athletic director of the University of Kansas? And my quick answer to that is, I'm going to say probably not. So he's saying, support David Beatty. Well, of course, because he's stuck with David Beatty for one more year. And I hope David Beatty does a great job. I hear he's a really great person. Brian Haynes talked about him before, and he inherited a bad situation, although he knew that when he took the job. And I hope he can turn around to where he does stay for a long time at the University of Kansas. But I think a lot of KU football fans, not that there's a lot of them out there, that will jump on the bandwagon, of course, if they win the Orange Bowl again, and then they'll talk about this tradition of Kansas football. But I would imagine that there are KU fans out there sitting there going, you know what, I hope we do stink this year. Because then we'll get rid of Beatty, and then Long can hire a guy like a Brett Bielema or somebody else, a bigger name. Yeah. Don't you think? That's what a lot of KU football fans are going to be like. Well, we don't want David Beatty to go out and go 6-6 and make a bowl, because that's just going to – it's kind of almost like the Bruce Weber situation in K-State there for a while. And that is, well, we don't – you know, I'm a K-State fan. I want K-State basketball to be good, but I don't like Bruce Weber so much, and I think we can get a better coach. And a few years ago, they were thinking Brad Underwood. So, really, I want Bruce – I'm kind of conflicted. I want K-State to be good, but I don't want to be good to where Bruce keeps his job. So, basically, you wanted mediocrity, but if it's too good to where they make a tournament or have a winning record, you're kind of conflicted as a fan. And I think for KU, they might be going, well, 6-6, that'd be great. We make a bowl, but wouldn't that put us further behind because we don't believe David Beatty's a guy that's going to take us to be 8-4, 9-3, 10-2 at some point in the future? And I think that was the same thing people thought with Bruce Weber. And, of course, K-State made the Elite Eight. And, yes, they caught a big break when a 16 beat a 1. We have no idea if K-State would have beat Virginia in the second round. They might have. Never happened. K-State took full advantage of the opportunity. But that got some people off of Bruce Weber's back because of the deep run they made, especially without Dean Wade. But wouldn't you say that's a similar feeling? Is that if you're a KU football fan right now, you're like, oh, yeah, I hope we win a few games, but we can't be too good because then we keep David Beatty. And we think we can't fire him because he goes 5-7, 6-6. I don't think he's the answer long-term anyway, so why don't we speed this process up? And that's what a lot of people thought with Bruce Weber.
Yeah. I can't really speak on that because I'm not, you know, I'm not a KU fan, so it doesn't affect me the way Bruce Weber would. I don't know if all KU fans feel that way or not, but I mean, there's got to be some that feel that way. I mean, there's no doubt that some of them are like that.
I think there's a lot of KU football fans that believe David Beatty's going to turn it around.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, in year four, if he turns it and goes 6-6 from a 1-whatever, then it's kind of like Bruce Weber. You know, he's kind of shown you a little bit here.
Right.
So,
but is that
can he enough? Can he be the guy that can keep it going? Well, I don't know.
Most people would say no.
Yeah, and there's no the problem with David Beatty is there's no track record before Kansas either. Like Charlie Weiss, we know that he couldn't win at Notre Dame, so then he doesn't win at he's not the guy because he hasn't done anything yet. You know, Turner Gill's a guy that didn't have a track record in a Power Five conference, but had a record as a coach already in college football. You know, this is the first job David Beatty's ever had as a head coach, so there's no real track record of whether he can continue it if he starts it, what I'm saying? So I think it's a little bit different situation, but there's no question that and also David Beatty followed Charlie Weiss and not Frank Martin, a coach that had gotten him to the Elite Eight and done some things and won some games, and that's a different there's different situations, but I understand what you're talking about. If you don't believe that David Beatty's the guy that can do it, then you're feeling the same way those K-State fans were that we're saying those things. I've never been a guy.
There's still K-State fans that think that.
Oh, yeah. And I've never been a guy that is wishing any ill. If my team can do good, that I support no matter what level it is.
Right.
If they're winning, I'm going to be happy. Like, I'm not going to be that guy that's, oh, man, they're winning. Now we're going to have to keep the coach.
I'm just going to be the guy that assumes that Beatty doesn't get KU one game away from the Final Four in college football this year, and we won't have to worry about it.
Yeah. I think you're right. So how's Jeff Long?
I don't think it's going to make a difference.
How's Jeff Long, AD, going to measure football success at KU?
Well, you know, big picture wise, I think for our program, it's first our goal is set to reach a bowl game. And so we'll strive to reach a bowl game. And once we reach that level, we won't stop there. Then we'll move on to more games. And then ultimately, I'm not shy and say about someday down the road, we're going to win the Big 12 championship. We've done it here at Kansas in the past, and it's something we're certainly going to work every day and night to do.
Okay, so when he says win a bowl game, I like that. I think that's a realistic, that should be the first goal for football. It shouldn't be, we hope to win four next year and then make a bowl game in 2 or 3 years. I like him saying that.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, that answers our question that we are asking ourselves the other day. What would it take for David Beatty to stay on at KU? I think it would be a bowl game.
Yeah.
I really do.
Make a bowl game.
Maybe 5-7 somehow, you know, and you have a tough, close loss.
I don't know what Kansas's laws are, but you can make a bowl game at 5-7.
Well, you can. Technically, you can. That's true. That might help.
I don't know what KU's stance is on that.
But. I don't know either. Well, I think KU would take your bowl game. I mean, if they're 2-10.
Exactly. I don't think they'd turn it down.
I think Beatty's got to win 5 to have any chance of keeping his job, and that's maybe being a little bit too low in regards to what he needs to do. To me, that almost sounds like, listen, we've got to take a huge step up this way here, or we're making a change. That's how I interpret it. Don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not going to sit here and, oh, woe is us. We don't have these scholarships and we don't have this. He didn't say anything about that. You notice that?
Yeah.
Shane Zinger brought it up before, and David Beatty's brought it up many times, and that's not something that Jeff Long brought up. Well, you know, we've still got to rebuild and get all these scholarships and do this and do that, and it's going to take a couple more years. He didn't say any of that stuff, which is smart, because that would not have gone over well with KU fans, the ones that still care about football. So, Jeff Long, new AD at KU. I think he's going to do a really good job at Kansas. I think it's a terrific hire by the University of Kansas. I don't know if they could have done much better. I think we're all stunned that they got a guy of this magnitude and of this much experience, especially in the Power 5 conferences. He's worked in the Big 12 before, in the SEC, of course, with Arkansas. And he's proven, he has a track record. Dusty was talking about track records earlier. He did a pretty good job at Arkansas. Did they go win a national championship or make a national championship or win the SEC? No, but they got better. And he brought in a big-time coach he stole away from Wisconsin, so he's got some pull. So I think the $64,000 question is, if David Beatty doesn't have this great year at KU this year where they go 5-7 or get a bowl game, who's going to be the next coach of the football team coming next year, a year from now, when Jeff Long has another press conference, I would guess, about this time or a lot sooner, saying, I'm here to let you know that we have hired a new coach. He has my full support. Brett Bielema, or whoever it might be.
Yeah.
I don't know who it's going to be. What is it, Willie Fritz? Is that another one, a name I heard from Tulane? People said he'd be a great hire. I don't know. Sometimes those up-and-coming coaches you get excited about, think they're great, and they don't pan out. Somebody you don't think's that great ends up being terrific. I remember Roy Williams wasn't highly thought of when he took over at KU basketball, and that turned out pretty doggone well. All right, let's turn our attention to the NBA, where Adam Silver had kind of a State of the Union address of the NBA in Las Vegas the other day during Summer League. And one of the things was the NBA age limit, and he basically said that he views, his personal view, Adam Silver, was that the NBA's 19-year-old age minimum is ready for an update. It's not something he can just snap his fingers and change. The age minimum was negotiated into the last collective bargaining agreement. It has to be renegotiated with the NBA Players Union to become basketball law, but Silver seemed to have the idea of a younger, more active NBA sometime in the near future. And he's talked about how they presented the pros and cons of going from 19 to 18 and so forth and so on. There are some people that believe that the NBA should make it where you got to go in college 2 years, maybe 3 years. Some people believe that if you're 18 and you want to go straight from high school to pros, that's your decision. Whether you make it or not, that's your decision. And it's your bed and you got to lie in it. I lean that way, because I see many other sports where there's no age, like, you know, Jennifer Capriati is playing professional tennis at the age of 13. We see golfers out there at the age of 14. I mean, we've seen, you know, football players a little bit different because of the violent nature of the sport, but we've seen Maurice Claret go early after, what was it, a year there at Ohio State. You're 19, by the way. There's a player that has gone straight from high school to NBA that I don't know if he was drafted. I think he might have been drafted, but he went overseas, I believe. but he's 19, so he didn't have to go to college. And so he's 19. So technically, let's say that the next LeBron James is out there at the high school level. Let's just talk LeBron James' son. There's a good example. Let's say LeBron James' son is 18, or he just turned 19, and he's he just finished his high school career. He can go straight to NBA.
I think the actual rule says 19 or a year out of high school is what the is what I've always been told. Because I mean, I think there's plenty of guys that are 19 that have graduated high school that have.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that pretty sure that the actual the rule, and it probably doesn't say that there, because generally you're going to be 19 after a year out of high school. But I want to say the collective bargaining agreement said you have to be a year out of high school to play in the NBA. Because I don't know that. Because let's say Svi came out of high school at 17,
mm-hmm.
and he's a year out of high school now, and then wants to go to the NBA. Mm-hmm. Like, say Svi wanted to go to the NBA after his freshman year. He's not 19 yet, but I think he could have gone because he's a year out of high school. And I'm not 100% sure, but I'm fairly sure that you have to be a year out of high school to be able to go. I don't think anybody, regardless of age, can come right from high school to the NBA.
Players whose 19th birthday falls during or before the calendar year of the draft, or at least 1 year removed from graduation of their high school class, and who do not meet the criteria for international players, are automatically eligible if they meet any of the following criteria. They have completed 4 years of college eligibility. If they graduated from high school in the U.S. but did not enroll in a U.S. college university, they have signed a contract or professional basketball team outside the NBA anywhere in the world and have played under that contract. They also must be released from that contract before they can leave college to go to the NBA. So it sounds like, based on what I'm reading here, as you have to be 1 year removed. This kid that is in the NBA, and like I said, I think he was drafted. I thought he went overseas and played for a year. Thus, he'd be a year removed from high school. Mm-hmm. And so he's 19. So I guess what I should reword what I said. You don't have to go to college for a year. To be eligible for the NBA draft. You can be 19, you just have to be a year removed from high school. You could technically...
Like Brandon Jennings went over to Europe for a year and came
LeBron
over.
LeBron James, his son, Bronny, could be 18, going to turn 19, and he decides, I don't want to go to college, and he can play on the AU circuit or whatever he wants to do, or go overseas, or he could just sit out and eat bonbons for a year, and then he'd be eligible to play mm-hmm. without having to play in college. He'd be eligible to play in the NBA. There is a conception or a perception that you have to play a year of college in order to go to the NBA.
That's definitely not true.
Not true. So what Adam Silver wants to do is basically say, I want to change it to 18. So you can go straight from high school to college. And there's a lot of players that have tried that and it hasn't worked very well. Certainly there's some that have worked very well, such as Kobe Bryant, Kevin Garnett, Jermaine O'Neal. Oh, yeah, another guy. What's his name? Oh, yeah, LeBron James. You know, those guys have turned out well, but they're more of the exception than the rule.
Sebastian Telfair.
Yeah.
That's the exception that you're talking about there.
Yeah, although at least he was in the NBA for a while. Oh, yeah, but he still might be.
Yeah.
There's other guys that don't even make the NBA, period. I remember there's a point guard from Michigan State left early. I think his last name was Taylor. And he didn't get drafted, didn't make an NBA team, and he's overseas. So that didn't work out for him, and he would have been better going back to Michigan State. But here's the thing. That's your decision. If you get bad advice, you ultimately have to make that decision. And you can blame it on people around you for making the wrong decision. But to me, are you that much more mature and wiser at 19 than 18? It depends on the person.
Well, sure.
Because there's 25-year-olds that aren't. I know 40-year-old people aren't very mature. So, and act like kids or children. So I think the age thing is a relative term when it comes to, well, what age should they be when they go to the NBA? And if you can have kids playing tennis and soccer and golf, soccer is a team sport, by the way, the other two are individuals, why can't you leave straight from high school to NBA? So if you're trying to protect those 18-year-olds from going straight from the high school to the NBA and protect them because you know they're not going to get drafted and then they're going to be stuck overseas and they can't play college ball and whatever else, if you're all about protecting them from those mistakes, then you should go the other way with the rule. You should make it to where they got to go to school for 2 or 3 years or have to sit out 2 or 3 years after high school before or have to be 21 before you're eligible to play in the NBA. So if you're going to the left and saying, well, we want to go from 19 to 18, then you're not worried about people making the wrong decisions And quite honestly, I don't think the NBA should have to should be worrying about that.
No,
that's not their job. Their job is not to be parents to these kids. It's a business. And if there's kids that are 18 years old that can play straight from high school to pro and skip college or skip overseas work, and they want to, why can't they? It happens in other sports. And if you make the wrong decision, that's on you. That's not on Adam. That's not on Adam Silver.
No. There's two things that I like to say about what you've talked about. Number one is, I'm in complete agreement with you, and I always have been, that if an 18-year-old wants to come straight out of high school to go to the NBA, that's his choice, one. He can have that right, and if we feel like that's a mistake, you know, that's his mistake to make and learn from. But two, the Lakers took a chance on Kobe Bryant. The Cavaliers took a chance on LeBron James out of high school. It's up to the team. If they decide that they want to take a chance on an 18-year-old kid, then they can do that. Right. There's nobody putting a gun to your head saying you've got to draft this kid out of high school.
No.
The teams make that decision whether they want to pick him or not. The teams do the same thing with guys that come out early. They make that decision whether they want to pick him or not, whether it was a good decision for him to come out early or not. There's a coach, and it's fading from me right now, who said it, but they're kind of saying, like, who is it for us to say that this kid's making the wrong decision, even if he doesn't get drafted? Mm-hmm. The NBA is not the only place you can make money. I know you make a lot more money playing in the NBA, but these kids are going to get a lot more money than they've ever dreamed of or thought of, even if they're playing in Europe. Right. I mean, if your goal is to come out of school to help your family maybe and get more money for them, you can make money in Europe and in Japan and Asia and places over there. You know, you can make money a lot of different places. I've seen it with some friends that I went to school with in JUCO that are playing. Some of them are still playing. One's in Argentina, and, you know, one played in Japan and was an all-star there for 5 to 10 years, you know, just playing overseas, and he made more money than I'll ever dream of.
Keith Langford's spent basically his whole career overseas and
made
a lot of money,
and
all-star.
And so it's easy for us to say that this kid made a mistake because he came out early, or it's easy for us to say this kid made a mistake because he came out of high school right away at 18 and he's not doing anything. He's sitting there, you know, if you're sitting tolling on an NBA bench for 3 years, then maybe we can say, maybe should have gone to school or gone overseas and then came to the NBA, something like that. But, I mean, it's easy for us to say that, but at the end of the day, I mean, they're still making a lot of money.
If you're at the end of NBA bench, you're still on the roster.
Exactly.
You're making money. That's a success.
Oh, yeah.
And you can learn for 2 or 3 years and become an all-star like Jermaine O'Neal did.
Yeah. We all just want to sit here and the only people we talk about are those LeBron James and Kobe Bryant and these types of situations, Kevin Garnett's. And, you know, I brought up Sebastian Telfair, who didn't have a really good career, but...
Actually, I think like he's still... I think it was at least 2 years ago, he was still in the league. You're acting like he's out of the league. He's still in the league.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, he's not a...
Well, but he's in the league.
Does he
play? You act like his career's over. Well, it doesn't matter if he plays. If he's getting paid, that's
exactly.
All that matters.
That's what I'm saying, though, is we're...
It's about getting a job and getting paid.
But, you know, what I'm saying is my comparison is... We're talking about guys like Jermaine O'Neal, Kobe Bryant, Kevin Garnett, LeBron James. Sebastian Telfair is not anything like that.
No.
But you can't say. And I'm not saying he's not making money. I would be contradicting what I just said if I said the kid's not making any money.
Right.
He was in the league until 2014.
Okay, so he's not
playing
in
China.
I thought you said he was in the NBA.
Well, I thought it said he was too, but then I looked it up more detail.
I thought it had been quite a while since he...
But he played in the NBA for... He was in the NBA for eight
seasons.
I think if you ask Telfair, he may say, I didn't make a mistake. You think he did.
No, I'm not saying he made a mistake. I'm saying he didn't live up to what those guys are. I'm just giving examples.
But you could be 22
of
and graduate college and you don't live up to it.
Sure. The only reason I brought Sebastian Telfair up was you were talking about the success of these guys.
Right, sure.
And he's not there was so much hype around that kid.
Yeah, there was.
They had a TV show about him coming out of high school, and there was so much hype, and he didn't even come close to living up to what we were talking about. That's why. That's the only reason I brought his name up.
Right.
I'm not, like I've said, I don't think he made a mistake. I'm not saying I'd be contradicting what I just said if I felt like he made a mistake.
Right.
But I'm saying
Felipe Lopez. Maybe that's a better example.
And that goes back to us like putting this huge thing at the top, like we assume these people want to be the greatest player of all time.
Exactly.
Sebastian Telfair, this might have been his whole goal all along. Just get to the league and make some money. I mean, we sit here and we think that every single person from KU or K-State or anybody straight from high school, well, they want to be the next LeBron James. Well, nobody's going to be the next LeBron James. Some of these guys are like, dude, I'm getting a paycheck, and I'm going to go play. And if I play, I do. If I don't, fine. I just want to play in the league as long as I can and cash my paycheck. And that's the whole idea when you come out of school is to get a job, well-paying job, support your family if you have kids, a wife, whatever else, or buy your big lavish jewelry and houses and whatever else. And, you know, we can sit here and say, well, Sebastian Telfer, that was a mistake, or Sebastian Telfer, that was, he didn't pan out. Well, that's based on our over expectations of him by the media.
Sure.
It is not that he didn't, did he tell the media to talk about him being the next greatest thing since sliced bread? For all we know, his motivation and drive was just to get to the league and stay there for a while. So we just always assume, well, because the media built up Sebastian Telfer, he made a mistake, or he had a horrible career because he didn't become a 10-time All-Star. Well, Telfer and his family may go, well, look at this bling. This is the way we're gonna. This is how we're judging it. It's worked out pretty well for us. How much money did you make this year? Not very much, you know. We just all get caught up in that, though. We in the media, just regular Joes and Janes out there, get all caught up in, well, that kid's making a huge mistake. He's 18, and now he's not, oh, he didn't get drafted in the NBA. He's not an NBA team, so he's a complete failure. Like you said, he can be in the G League. You could be overseas making a whole bunch of money like Keith Langford and support your family, play for 5 years, and you're set for life. And you didn't ever play in the NBA. But some of us are like, well, you're a failure if you didn't play in the NBA.
Yeah.
Or you're a failure because you weren't an All-Star. Or you're a failure because you didn't live up to the hype that we created and he didn't.
Yeah.
It's kind of hypocritical.
Well, yeah, I mean, it comes on both sides. I mean, we wouldn't have been given a list like we were had we not followed along with that concept of guys that are 18 mm-hmm. that have come out, or guys that come out right out of high school that have had unbelievably successful careers in our eyes and what we believe.
Right.
I mean, it comes on both sides. I mean, LeBron James probably didn't expect to have the career he's having. I mean, he probably expected to be one of the best. But, you know, can LeBron James legitimately say that he came in at 18 and said, I'm going to be the best player of all time, and that's what I think is going to happen? I don't know. You know, we don't know what his goals and what he thought was going to happen. We don't know about Kevin Garnett. Did he think he was going to be the best, one of the best power forwards to ever play the game when he came in at Minnesota? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they're going to measure their success either.
Well, they obviously had the motivation.
Those are the ones we talk about because they've had that kind of success.
They had the inner motivation and went after it. Other college basketball news, UCLA has had a tough week. Former UCLA basketball player Billy Knight was found on a Phoenix roadway early Sunday morning, pronounced dead shortly afterwards by the Phoenix Fire Department. Billy Knight was just 39 years of age. He played for the Bruins from 97-02, averaged 8 points, 2 rebounds. Steve Lavin was his head coach. They made it to the NCAA tournament each of the years that Billy Knight played there. The news of Knight's death comes just days after another former UCLA player, Tyler Honeycutt, and I remember both these players. Tyler Honeycutt apparently fatally shot himself during a standoff with police in L.A. on Friday. Honeycutt played for UCLA from 2009 to 2011. Before Knight passed away, he posted a video to the internet several days before titled, I Am Sorry, Lord, wherein he said he didn't feel he belonged on Earth. In a shaking voice, Knight also expressed his regrets over his life of sin. Authorities say there was no foul play involved in Knight's death, and a medical examiner report determined it was death by suicide. Authorities say there was no foul play involved in Knight's death, and a medical examiner report determined it was death by suicide. According to ESPN, he suffered multiple blunt force injuries to the head.
Sounds like one of those deals where somebody commits suicide by shooting themselves twice in the back of the head, you know, kind of deals.
That's not how you usually describe gunshots, as blunt force injuries. I've never heard it described the way. That sounds like somebody beat you with a baseball bat. Multiple blunt force injuries to the head. Are you with me on that? I don't understand that.
I've never heard of a suicide that was ruled a suicide that was
said that had multiple
in that manner.
Yeah. Huh. Anyway, in Knight's final season at UCLA, he averaged 14 points a game. He went undrafted in the 2002 NBA draft, but went on to professionally play in the D League as well as France and Japan. So he made some good money.
Honestly, it's funny you say that because the guy I was talking about that played in Japan had a bunch of social media posts about this kid that he played against him. He was actually friends with him. Uh-huh. That's funny that he got brought up when I was talking about that guy that played in Japan. So
wow. That's just, you know, that's tough though for university. Two players to go here in just the last 4 or 5 days. One of suicide, the other of self-inflicted as well, but in a standoff with police. So obviously some mental health issues for both of those players that used to play at UCLA. And just put a bow on the KU basketball situation, and athletic director Jeff Long, a report from KUSports.com, says that KU coach Bill Self and new AD Jeff Long discussed the ongoing FBI investigation during Jeff Long's interview process, which is good signs.
Well, yeah.
It's a good sign from the standpoint of if you are hoping Jeff Long and Bill Self get along, Bill Self was on board with this hire from the very get-go and was actually part of the process. That's a good sign, because I've heard these
Jeff
rumors.
Jeff Long said yesterday he probably wouldn't be there at KU without Bill Self.
So that means they're going to get along probably pretty well. But yeah, there was, you know, concerns when he got hired, as with any new AD. Well, you know, Al Bol didn't get along with Roy Williams, helped drive him off, and Zinger and Self got along, and so you bring in a new guy. Will Long actually be able to get along with Self? There were people already worried about that. It looks like it's going to work out pretty well. Yeah. I think Long's going to be like, I'll stay out of your business as long as the FBI gets out of here.
I mean, you're not going to hire a guy
without the big kahuna.
Without Bill Self knowing what his intentions are going to be with his program.
You would think.
That's the moneymaker right now for sure for KU, and it's something that, I mean, obviously with the FBI investigation, the AD has to be involved in that and figure out what's going on there. But as far as what's going on with the basketball program, as long as he's keeping everything in tip-top shape and doing things the right way, nobody's going to stir the pot with Bill Self.
I mean, basically,
I didn't think anybody would stir the pot with Bill Snyder anyway, but John Curry proved me wrong.
Well,
but,
everybody didn't think Al Bol would stir the pot with Roy Williams. Exactly. So these ADs aren't so bright, are they?
So you got to make sure as a chancellor or a university president, whatever, whoever's making that decision and doing those interviews, make sure that they're going to get along with the head honcho at your university that's making the bank for you and that's having the most success.
This doesn't mean that Jeff Long and Bill Self are going to agree on everything.
No,
they might butt heads on some things, certainly, or the relationship can deteriorate. That happens sometimes.
Sure. But you're not going to go into a situation like, for instance, if you're a single parent and marry somebody your kid hates.
Yeah. Well, some may, but that's probably not a wise decision.
You know.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I don't think anybody goes into it with that mindset. We'll figure it out.
Yep, I agree with you. So, Jeff Long, new AD at Kansas. We'll see if he can turn around the football program. And then also, he's going to have to raise a lot of money because they got to spend a lot of money on renovations. $350 million renovations they want to do for the football program. We'll see if Jeff Long can be the big-time fundraiser. You know, K-State, they need to turn things around financially. John Curry, people can say all these things about John Curry. He did a heck of a job financially at the University of Kansas State.
Oh, yeah.
At Kansas State University. And then Gene Taylor is just, you know, obviously they had a record that we just went over with yesterday in donations. So K-State financially, K-State's doing great. KU, I think, is fine financially, but they, if they want to step up their football program, it sounds like they need a lot of money. And so Jeff Long, not only is he going to have to do his job as athletic director and navigate through this FBI process, a mess he did not create but inherited, but he's also going to have to be Mr. Hi, I'm Jeff Long. Would you like to donate to the University of Kansas? Because we really need your money.